Hey, good morning, everybody. Nice to see you guys. I am a pastor. I don't look like it. I look like I just broke out of jail, but it is good to be with you. A bunch of you I know, some of you I don't, but it's just such a privilege, and I love this church so much. I've been around kind of from the beginning days of Monument, and man, you guys have been on such a journey, and I've just had a front row seat at certain moments just to get to see. And I want to just commend to you, if you're new to this church, I want to commend to you this church, and I really want to commend to you the leaders of this church. There's a lot of like scandals in churches these days and all the rest, but I've watched these leaders, this team, I've just watched their character come through again and again. They are men and women of deep character, courage, conviction, integrity, and they love you. And they've had a million, opportunities to go, I don't want to do this anymore, and still they're here. And so I want to commend them to you, commend this church to you. And I love the series you're in. It is right up my alley. Like Eric said, I have for years, what he didn't say is I really wanted to be, there's a list there, right? And so it's like, you can be a teacher, you can be a prophet, you can be an evangelist, you can be a pastor. Like I wanted to be a teacher, because I was like, those are the dudes that like, man, they're so smart, and everybody's like taking notes while they talk, and like, I just felt like I wanted to be that guy, and like, I've just finally settled. I'm not, and so don't expect to be taught anything today. It's not my gift. I got nothing. But I do give off like a pheromone. Like people want to talk to me about their problems, and everywhere I go, if I'm in an elevator with one other person, that other person is going to talk to me. Like, it is just a thing. Like, it happens to me. I've got so many crazy stories. I remember one time we were in Puerto Rico for our 8th wedding anniversary. Jill and I had flown down there. We were in this little village. There was one restaurant, and the restaurant had 4 seats in it. And we were sitting at 2 of the 4 seats, tiny little, like, basically like a little living room. And this guy would come over and say, this is the fish we caught today. This is the veggies and the fruits I went and picked. And what do you guys like? Let's make some fun food. I mean, I'm a foodie. I was like, this is going to be amazing. Me looking at Jill looking at me. This guy's cooking whatever he's cooking. 4 seats. There's only 2 people here. It's probably not going to be anybody else. Well, then this other couple comes in, sits in the other 2 seats. I'm like, whatever. They're dead to us. We're like, it's our anniversary. We're in a village in Puerto Rico, and this girl, I hear her say, Donnie? And I was like, please, please God, no. And so just to like help you feel better, I look over and I was like, yeah? She goes, my name's so-and-so, and like, we've wanted forever to go to your church. We live like 20 minutes away. And I was like, oh my God, like, here we are, 4 seats, Puerto Rico, small village. And like, so it's just a thing, and I've embraced it. But like Eric said, I hope if I do have that gift, I hope what it is not, let's bring that guy in and he gets all the people saved. Like, that's not really what this is about. That gift, those gifts actually help you, equip you. And so I hope today you feel really equipped. That's what should be happening here. I think Christian culturally, we've made this evangelism thing far too Sunday morning centered. And it's not to say that things can't happen on Sunday mornings. It's not to say that things aren't going to happen this Sunday morning. Like, if you're here and you're not yet a follower of Jesus, first of all, I think it took tremendous courage for you to be here. Tremendous courage for you to be here. You don't know if you believe this. You don't know what these people are going to do. You don't know what these songs mean. You don't know what's going on. Stand up, sit down, whatever. It took a lot for you to get here. I don't know why you're here, but I'm glad you're here. And you're going to get to hear about how great Jesus is today. But like for the rest of us, followers of Jesus, sometimes we make evangelism all about the Sunday morning. I remember a lady came to me one time in the lobby, and that was back, it was building whatever. I mean, we've had a lot of buildings too. We could swap building stories later. But it was a tiny little nothing of a lobby. She walks over. She's got her friend with her who's like right behind her. And she goes, I brought my friend today. And I was like, oh, that's great. You know, and like I could see her friends a bit just trying to look like she's not being talked about, you know. And she goes, she's not a Christian. Really, really bad, really bad. And I was like, I want to die, like on her friend's behalf, you know? She's like, just get her today, get her. And I was like, man, like, am I getting punked right now? Like, and so we go into the room. I'm like, yeah, fine. I'm trying to just move on, you know? We go into the room. She's sitting in the back, and I'm not kidding. During the service, she's like, I can see her, and she's doing this. She's going, like pointing to her friend, and her friend's like freaking mortified, you know? Guys, we're so bad at this. We're so cringy at this. So I hope I equip you today, but I hope I equip you to go do this. Not just always feel like you have to bring people to a meeting and that's where it happens, although things can happen in meetings. We're going to pick up where you left off. You've been here the last couple of weeks. You've talked about the Great Commission. Jesus says, go do what I said. Go do what I've taught you. Go be like me into the world. We talked last week about stepping through these doors. I'm here hoping just to pick right up and help equip you. Part of equipping you today is also kind of helping you see the power of how to engage people's stories, your own stories, other people's stories. Again, we've approached this evangelism thing far too programmatically. Learn these laws, say these things, do this, give this coin, all the little stuff through all the years. One of the most powerful things is when you start to see that your story of how Jesus impacted you is like really good stuff, like to be shared with everyone else. And it looks really like the success looks like when you tell your story in such a way that it leads to other people going, I want to figure out who that Jesus is. And they get their own stories. So we're going to dive in. We're going to hear one woman's story. It's a little bit of a long story, but it's crazy. And, you know, length of story, you know, can be tough if it's not kind of eventful. There's a lot going on here, right? And so I think it'll keep your attention. But as you go, listen to this about this woman. Listen to her story, her life. Think about her. Imagine her. Like, picture her. Also, think about, like how Jesus interacts with her. And also, like, if you're a follower of Jesus, the disciples here, I mean, they're blowing it like normal. And so just have a look at that and we'll talk about it, okay? John chapter 4, verses 1. When Jesus learned that the Pharisees had heard that Jesus was making and baptizing more disciples than John, although Jesus himself did not baptize, but only his disciples, he left Judea and he departed again for Galilee. And he had to pass through Samaria. Now, we don't have time to get into the context here, but Jews and Samaritans aren't supposed to be hanging out together. But Jesus goes through Samaria. He comes to a town of Samaria called Sychar near the field of Jacob, that field that Jacob had given to his son Joseph. Jacob's well was there. So Jesus, wearied as he was from his journey, we'll talk about that later, was sitting beside the well. It was about the sixth hour, and a woman from Samaria came to draw water. Jesus said to her, "Give me a drink." His disciples had gone into the city to buy food. The Samaritan woman said to him, "How is it that you, a Jew, ask for a drink from me, a woman of Samaria?" A woman, not supposed to talk to. Samaritans, not supposed to interact with. Jews have no dealings with Samaritans. Jesus answered her, "If you only knew the gift of God and who it was that is saying to you, 'Give me a drink,' you would have asked him and he would have given you living water." That's a mic drop right there, right? The woman said to him, "Sir, you have nothing to draw water with. You've walked a long way. You're hallucinating, you know, like this well is deep. Where do you get that living water? Are you greater than our father Jacob?" I mean, what a question if you know Jesus. Are you greater than our father Jacob? "He gave us this well. He drank from it himself, as did his sons and his livestock." She's very proud of this well. And Jesus said to her, "Everyone who drinks of this water will be thirsty again. Whoever drinks of the water that I will give him will never be thirsty again. The water I give him will become in him a spring of water welling up to eternal life." And Jesus is blowing her mind. This woman said, "Sir, give me this water so I don't have to be thirsty or come to this draw water anymore," right? So she's thinking like, "Oh my gosh, you've got some little secret like water, that potion you can give me, and I don't have to carry this thing around anymore." She's still thinking about actual water. So this is what Jesus, he flips the script on her. He says, "All right, why don't you go call your husband and you can come here." This is a startling moment in the story. The woman says, and we don't know how long it took, but I imagine it might have took a moment. The answer she comes up with is, "I have no husband." She's got to kind of think about, how do you talk about this in that way? "I still want that water, you know?" And Jesus said, "You're right in saying, 'I have no husband.' You've had five. And the one you now have is not your husband. What you've said is true." Again, we don't know how long it took for her to catch herself, but she eventually says, "Sir, I perceive you're a prophet." So now she's got to say something to kind of match that. So she goes, "Our fathers worshiped on this mountain, but you say this in Jerusalem is the place where people ought to worship." And Jesus said, "Woman, believe me, the hour is coming. It's actually when either you're on this mountain or in Jerusalem will you worship the Father. You worship what you do not know. We worship what we do know. Salvation's from the Jews, but the hour is coming and is now here." Like in this moment, when true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and in truth, The Father is seeking such people to worship him. God is spirit, and those who worship him must worship in spirit and in truth. Woman said, look, I know there's a Messiah coming. He's called the Christ. And when he comes, he's going to tell us all things. And this is like the mic drop. Jesus said to her, yeah, I who speak to you am he. Just then, boom, what a moment. Just then, so dramatic, the disciples come back. And they marveled at what's happened in this woman's life. No, they marveled he was talking with a woman. But no one said, what do you seek, or why are you talking to her? So the woman left her jar and went into the town and said to the people, come see a man who told me all that I ever did. Can this be the Christ? They went out of the town and were coming to him. So this whole village is now moving towards Jesus. Meanwhile, the disciples were urging him, saying, Rabbi, eat. Right? They're just really, really thinking about lunch here. But he said to them, I have food to eat you did not know about. This is one of my favorite lines in the whole Bible. So the disciples said to one another, has anyone brought him something to eat? Like they're all like, who brought Jesus a sandwich? Trying to get like extra points. Like they, it's just hilarious to me. Jesus said, my food is to do the will of him who sent me to accomplish his work. Do you not say there's 4 months and then comes the harvest? Look, I tell you, lift up your eyes. See, the fields are white with harvest. If they lifted up their eyes just right, they might have seen a whole village of people walking their way. Already the one who reaps is receiving wages and gathering fruit for eternal life. So the sower and the reaper may rejoice together, for here the saying holds true. One sows, another reaps. I seem to reap for that which you do not labor. Others have labored. You've entered into their labor. Many Samaritans from that town had believed in him because of the woman's testimony. He told me all that I ever did. So when the Samaritans came to him, they asked him to stay with them 2 days, and then many more believed because of his word. And they said to the woman, it's no longer because of what you said that we believe. We've heard for ourselves, and we know that this is indeed the Savior of the world. Like I said, it's a long story. A lot going on there. You might have got lost at some point in time, especially if you're new to it. Essentially, Jesus is hanging out with a lady who sleeps around. His disciples are worried about what to eat, and a whole village ends up finding out he's the Savior of the world. Let's just have a look at the story. Let's look at the lady. Let's look at Jesus. Let's look at the disciples. Let's see what we can learn for ourselves. Firstly, this lady, she, if I can sum her up, was someone just desperate for satisfaction. That's who she is. The glaring thing that comes from this story every time she talks is this kind of idea about being thirsty, right? She's tried getting her thirst quenched through water. That helps, right? She's tried getting her thirst quenched, some of her thirst quenched through some religious traditions. She's tried getting her thirst quenched through broken marriages, sexual promiscuity. First two things don't seem that bad, water, religious tradition. But when we learn about her relational history, man, she hasn't just stayed in these sort of safe, acceptable roads that often promise satisfaction. She has probably moments of deep pain and desperation wandered down these darker paths that have put her in bed with man after man in an attempt to numb a pain and quench a thirst. Yeah, that's her. Well, thankfully, she's nothing like any of us, right? I think the second thing I would say, if you were taking notes, is that we're a lot more like her than we may think. In one way or another, everyone in this room is like this woman. We're all looking for deep satisfaction. We're looking for it in different ways. Some of us through basic essentials. She was looking for water. You know, some of us, it's just, if I could just get a roof over my head, if I could just pay my bills, if I could just have food and water, if I could just have, then I would be happy. And you realize that's just not true. You get all that and you're not. Some of us, it's through religious kind of activities and traditions. If I just go to church every week and pray the right prayers and then, and actually that doesn't work either. And some of us through darker avenues, maybe it's sexual stuff, maybe it's substance abuse, whatever it is. She was clearly a mess, but no greater a mess than us. What we have in common with her also is that I don't think she knew she was a mess. I think a lot of times we don't know that we're a mess either. She's just going through the motions. She's getting some water. She's worshiping on the right mountain. She's bumping through different relationships. She hasn't quite figured out, man, I'm in a really dark place. And when you and I, like, when we face her brokenness, I think it's like a mirror because we see ourselves. Oh, man, I'm like that. Like if we really see her rightly, we can see ourselves. Like her story is powerful, not because it's so different to us. It's powerful because even thousands of years later, it's just like ours. All of us are thirsty. Well, what does Jesus do? Well, he engages her story with compassion. That's what he does. I mean, first, he's really confusing to her. She can't quite figure this whole thing out. How are you going to get water? Who do you think you are? You're better than this guy. You're a Jew. Why are you talking? She's just so confused and disorientated. And I would just say, if you're new to Jesus, if you're new to checking out Jesus, just prepare to be disorientated. Sometimes you don't get told that at the beginning. I just want to say, like, you're going to scratch your head a lot. You're like, what? Who is this guy? You're going to read and go, he said, what? He identifies with us, but he is much bigger than us. And that means that when you see him correctly, you will be confused. He's disorientating. He's staggering. And so he confuses her, but that's not where he wants to leave her. He wants to help her. And so then he begins to systematically dismantle all of the futile ways she has tried to satisfy herself. So he reveals how basic essentials like water can only bring momentary relief. He says, this water is going to help you for a minute. It's going to give you a little bit of help, but like you're going to run out and then you're going to have to come back again. And years, thousands of years later, guess what? We haven't fixed this problem. When you drink water, I bet you have to go drink more water later. Like that's a thing, right? And it just speaks to this reality that like her, we need to know that our most basic essentials can never fully satisfy us. Never fully satisfy us. And if you've ever kind of like thought, if I just got that house, if I just got that thing, if I just got that, and then you're getting like, I'm still not happy. If I just got that thing, if I just got that house, if I just got that job, it's like those things are never going to meet the need, right? So he exposes that. Then he begins to expose that really she's got these kind of worthless hopes in religious tradition, boasting in the well she drank from, the mountain she worshiped on, and all this stuff. The problem is it doesn't have anything to do with her. She doesn't have any personal like knowledge of who God is. It's just sentiment. It's just tradition. Jesus says it like this. You worship what you don't know. You're going through these religious motions, but like there's nothing actually real happening with you. Just like the water. It's just another useless attempt to try to find satisfaction. It might make you feel warm and fuzzy when you're at the service or doing the thing, but like there's nothing real here. And like her, I think we do the same. We imagine ourselves to be justified because we go to church, because we're nice people, because we vote in a certain way. But so many people who would claim that this is like, that they're kind of religious like this, have no relationship to Jesus. A recent study was done. It turns out 70-odd percent of people in America would still say that they're Christians. We're a Christian nation. Well, upon further questioning, it turns out that 4% of the 70% would say, yeah, that means like, I'll do whatever Jesus says. I want to be like him. I obey him no matter what. That makes a little bit more sense. 4% of America, it turns out, would say they're actually following Jesus. Like them, they're just going through the motions. So Jesus dismantles this stuff. He exposes this stuff. And then lastly, he lovingly exposes her shameful brokenness. Go call your husband. He knows it already, but he's gonna help give her the ability to tell her story. He engages this. You know, Jesus being God, Jesus being holy, her being who she was, him knowing everything about her. I mean, you can just imagine, like, Jesus would be disgusted by her and would hate her and would judge her and maybe even, like, tell, wait, you wait right here. My disciples are coming back. I'm going to make an example out of you, like, that whole thing, right? But it's not what he does. He's kind. He's compassionate. He's dealing with a woman who has moved long past water wells into a very long string of hurtful, shameful attempts to satisfy herself, likely between every relationship, between every man. She must have thought, never again, or again, but not with a man like that, or just one more time. And in between those moments, no doubt, there were trips to the well, trips to the sacred mountain, promises to do better, broken promises to do better, shamed again, again, again. She's exposed now before Jesus, who knows everything. What does Jesus do? He doesn't leave her there. He declares he's the answer to what she's always searched for. I am he. I'll quench that thirst, and you'll never be thirsty again. Jesus said in John 6, I'm the bread of life. Whoever comes to me shall not hunger. Whoever believes in me shall not thirst. The invitation is to whoever, to anyone. It might even be you today, here. And if you're like this lady, what I would encourage you to do is respond like her. I'll just tell you what that looks like. I think it means to go all in, believing in Jesus and following Jesus. You might be like her. You might have currently tried everything you can think of to be satisfied. It's led to nothing but shame and a sense that you'll never be satisfied. Wondering, what would the actual Jesus really do if he met me? He would do this. How do we know that? Well, because we have lots of other stories, not just John 4. And in all the stories, Jesus is basically doing the same thing. He is over and over again, quote, moved with compassion. That word compassion means that he willingly enters into other people's suffering. That's what he does. So fully go all in. How? Just come to him. What does that even mean? Well, Jesus said it like this in Matthew 11. He said, come to me, all who labor, who work really hard and are heavy laden, are like burdened, crushed. He says, I'll give you rest. He says, take my yoke upon you and learn from me. He's basically saying, come be my follower. Give your life to me. He says, learn from me. I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. My yoke is easy, my burden's light. So go all in. That's your first step. Second step is stop focusing on your primal needs. She leaves her water jar behind. It could be significant. It could be insignificant, but it's in the Bible, so I'm drawn to it. And I'm like, look at her, man. That's her water jar. We don't know if she had 50 other ones. She didn't go to Walmart and buy a bunch of water jars. She left that thing behind. Why? It's like a picture of something. She has, like, her priorities have just been flipped. She has, like, abandoned this, like, obsession with getting more water. And she is like, she's now on a different mission. Jesus said it like this in Matthew 6, seek first the kingdom of God and everything else will be added to you. So go all in, come to him and seek him first. And the third thing I would say is, like her, tell everybody you know what Jesus does for you. It says she told the people, which literally means mankind, which literally means this woman went to that village and told everything with a pulse what Jesus had done. I mean, the last thing I would want to do, to be honest with you, is brag about all my mess if I was her. But she can't shut up about it. And she's so persuasive, the entire village comes along. I mean, what did that even look like? And it's so amazing. They end up believing in Jesus. Her story led to them meeting Jesus and having their own story. So you may not feel that right in this current moment. Your story can be of much value. But her story led to a whole village getting saved. So you never know. We'll give you an opportunity here in a little bit if you want to come and talk more about that, pray for that or whatever. Let me just spend a few minutes encouraging us, those of us who are already followers of Jesus, what should we do with a story like this? Well, we should read it and go, let's act like Jesus and not the disciples. That's like the big idea. The disciples blew it a lot in the story, which is actually very comforting for us who are followers of Jesus. They go to an entire town of people and accomplish nothing but getting some groceries. That's what they did. Just look at this. They went to an entire village. They got some food. Jesus met one woman. She got her life changed. And then the whole village gets their life changed. Right? The moral of the story is, get groceries like Jesus, not the disciples. Right? They come back. They're shocked he's talking to a woman. Then they're trying to get him to eat. Then they're wondering who snuck him a sandwich. Right? The woman in the story ends up looking better than them. We're a lot like them. Sometimes. All the time. We can be around lots of people and nothing happens. No one ever gets their life changed. No one ever hears about Jesus. We went to the store. We got groceries. Got everything on our list. Like, we can do that, right? We can really blow it sometimes and miss what God's up to. And what I love here, friends, is that Jesus doesn't fire the disciples on the spot. Say, you guys are out. She's in. Some of these people from the village, we're starting over, right? He re-envisions them by reminding them what's important. Have a look at the fields. They're white for heart, like they're white. Like it's happening, right? So let's just take a few minutes here and let's just consider, how do we do this? Why do we do this? Let me just start with, like, why don't we do this? I know that sometimes what I get, this is gonna get a bit practical, but sometimes what I get is this, like, I don't do it because I don't really know what to say, or gosh, I'm a little scared. You know, I don't want to step out there. I don't want, you know, like, I'm just freaked out. And, well, I think someone else is better than that. Or, you know, like, I don't think my story is interesting. There's all these, like, kind of things that we'll do. If I just kind of say, friends, if you're a follower of Jesus, like, you got to work through that because it's not an option for you. Like, Jesus said, go do what I said. Like, we have to figure this out. But what's interesting, there's a recent study, I actually think we might have a slide of it, that was done. Just listen to this. This is kind of interesting. It says almost all practicing Christians, this is a Barna study, almost all practicing Christians believe that part of their faith means being a witness about Jesus, which means you don't need to be convinced that this is part of your faith. It's like somehow being a witness. 95 to 97%, right? And that the best thing that could ever happen to someone is for them to know Jesus. 94 to 97%. So we don't have to convince you of that either, apparently. Right? Millennials, in particular, feel equipped to share their faith with others. For instance, almost 3/4, 73%, say they know how to respond when someone raises a question about their faith, and that they feel gifted at sharing their faith with others, some 73%. That's higher than any other generational group. Gen X, 66%, boomers, 59%, elders, 56%. But listen to this line. This shook me. Despite that, many millennials are unsure about the actual practice of evangelism. Almost half of millennials agree that, at least somewhat, that it is wrong, like morally, to share one's personal beliefs with someone from a different faith in hopes that they might one day share in their faith. That is a strange phenomenon that we're living in. We're like, you feel like I'm a follower of Jesus, I'm supposed to witness. I do feel like if somebody would respond to Jesus, it would really change their life. It's the most dramatic thing they could do. I feel equipped to do this. I feel like I've got something to say. I think I can answer the questions, but it's morally wrong. Like, that's what's hanging a lot of folks up. Is they, in our current cultural moment, they feel that it's morally wrong, like, to share about Jesus. Now, we could talk for a long time about that, but just let me just quickly say, I would say that it's morally wrong not to. Jude 23 says this, describing like how we should act. It says, have mercy on those who doubt. And then it says in verse 23, save others by snatching them out of the fire. What a dramatic picture of what people are doing with their lives. Like, one of the things I do is I volunteer as a chaplain for our local first responders. And I'm a bit strange in that, which means for the last kind of 8 years, I've gone on scene to countless calls. House fires, drownings, overdoses, suicides, all the stuff. And I'm often there when we are still trying to extricate people from the home that's engulfed in flames. And so got a lot of issues from that whole situation. But like, I can't help but I share that to say, when I read this phrase, save others by snatching them out of the fire, I wonder to myself if we would think it was morally wrong for a firefighter to snatch someone from a fire. Or if we think it would be morally wrong, morally repulsive, to know people were burning in a fire and go, well, I mean, I bet they probably want to be in there. I mean, if they didn't, they've got choices. If they want to talk about not being in a house with fire, I'm willing to answer their questions. I don't want to cross any lines. Like, we would be like infuriated. And I would say, friends, it's a pretty relevant example for us. So I'm just trying to answer the question. I think it's morally wrong not to do this. If you believe what you say you believe. How do we do it? Let me just quickly give you 6 P's. This is what I use for myself. And they all start with P because I'm a preacher. They could have started with another letter, but they all have to start with the same letter. For me, this is how I do this for myself. So let me encourage you, equip you to go do this, and you can come up with your own letters if you want to. It won't hurt my feelings. The 6 P's are this: be present, be persistent, be patient. We'll go over them again. So be prepared, practice, and pray. Firstly, be present. And the big idea here is, friends, you've already heard some of these stories. It's just that. Pay attention to how God is at work in all the ordinary places. That is the, if I could leave you with one thing, that's it. And it's already came through in those stories that you heard. Just pay attention to how God's at work in all the ordinary places. Jesus is not in like the kind of place you'd have your like radar up. He's at a well. It's so ordinary. And then he tells his disciples, the fields are white for harvest. What's he trying to say? Like, it's all around you. It's all the time, all around you. Almost all the miracles and in these kinds of events that happen in the Bible happen outside of like synagogues, happen outside of church meetings. And I can tell you as a fact, almost every single story I've got like this happened way outside of a church setting. So don't go to the grocery store like the disciples with your little list and check all your things. In fact, the phone is like your worst enemy. It keeps you from looking up and seeing people around you. When you go to restaurants, when you're around other people, even at when I'm pumping gas, I'm like the creepiest dude in the world. I mean, look at me. But then imagine me pumping gas and you're on the other side of me. I've got this, like, Acts 17 says he predetermines exact times and places where we live. So I'm pumping gas. If I catch eye contact with you, I'm thinking this. There's billions of people, like, what, 7, 8, whatever, billion people on the planet. And here we are, locking eyes. I mean, what are the odds? Pretty staggering, if you ask me, you know? I'm convinced there's a chance we're talking about Jesus, you know? Like there's like billions of other people that could be here, and it's you. Like, it's me. Let's do this, you know? It's just have your eyes open in your daily routines. Don't go try to add tons of, oh, I'm gonna go walk through the city. Just be a normal person with your eyes open. You know, the New Testament tells us over and over again to put on Christ. The language there is like getting dressed. It's even a little exercise you can do in the morning. As you're getting your clothes on, Jesus, I want to put on you. I want to go be you. Everywhere I go, school, work, neighborhood, store, whatever, I'm going to go and I'm going to act like you act. And I know like stories like John 4 and stories like Mark 5 and stories like on and on and on. I know what you do. I want to be like that. That's present. We won't spend that much time on all of them. Be persistent. This is just pragmatism for me. I just go to the same places over and over and over again. We have a grocery store in our town called Harris Teeter. I'm the unofficial pastor of Harris Teeter Grocery Store. I know every staff member. I know the shifts that they work. I know about Miss Peaches when she battled cancer. We stood beside her. Then I found out that Miss Rosie, who's one of the managers, her husband got cancer, and we stood by her. And then Miss Barbara couldn't pay her rent, and so we got involved in that. And I knew that when Wyatt, who's a butcher, was really hoping for a new job so he can get some insurance for him and his family, I was one of the first people he wanted to tell that he had an interview, and I was one of the first people he wanted to tell that it was his last day. They missed me. I just love the staff of Harris Teeter. I mean, like, isn't that the weirdest thing in the world? Like, it's the weirdest thing. I go there so much. I've come to love them, and they love me. They find me and go, hey, did you hear about Rosie's husband? He got the all clear. He's cancer free. Like, I'm like, it's not that hard. I just go to the grocery store over and over again. Go to the same restaurant over and over again. Ask for the same server. Don't be weird. It's tough for us Christians, but just don't. Like, we're almost done here. Be present. Be persistent. Be patient. All I'm going to say is resist that Christian. This goes back to creepy. Resist the urge to kind of always be closing. Look, man, sometimes, like most of the time for me, the first chat doesn't lead in some like, bam, they become Christians. Just walk through the door that you have in front of you and then trust God for another one. Just be patient. We've had some of these relationships take years. There is a young lady in our town who I've been getting my hair cut. Don't laugh. I used to have hair when she cut it, and then I got this hair. Now she cuts that hair. She cuts Jill's hair. She doesn't know Jesus. She doesn't believe in Jesus, and we know that. And every time we go get her hair cut there, she fires at us in front of all the other people in there the most unbelievable, insane, the questions you would not want to have, the conversation you wouldn't want to have in front of anybody else, she wants to talk about that. And we're trapped because she has scissors. and it's been years, and I don't know what will ever happen. Easter week, Jill was getting her hair cut. And gosh, man, stuff. And she just says to Jill, she's like, so what are you doing this weekend? Jill's like, well, it's Easter. It's kind of a thing for us, you know? And she's like, there's Good Friday and there's Easter. She goes, that's a crazy thing. She's like, why do you guys call it Good Friday? I mean, teed up and ready to go, you know? Like, but that's taken years to get to a point where she'd ask us a question like that. And when her husband got in a really bad wreck and he had a brain injury, like, she wanted to talk to me. She wanted me to talk to her husband. Like, just be patient. You don't know. Be present. Be persistent. Be patient. Next one is be prepared. Just be ready to step through the door when it comes. Jesus sees the moment and he steps into it with this woman. And just remember this little line. I said it would come up. He was wearied from his travel. I'll just tell you, these kinds of things never happen at an opportune time. Jesus' ministry is rightly often called a ministry of interruptions. That's a fun thing to go underline. In Matthew 14, a really painful one happens. Jesus finds out his cousin, John the Baptist, has been beheaded. And it says that Jesus gets in a boat by himself and goes off to a solitary place to be alone. Yeah, it humanizes Jesus, doesn't it? I'm like, checks out. I'd want to do the same thing. Except for a giant crowd of people, some 20,000 people, follow him to the other side. And so he now goes to mourn the death of this incredible man. He said that was the most amazing man ever born of a woman. And instead, he shows up and these people are there waiting. And what does Jesus do? I wish you people would leave me alone. I need a little bit of space. No, it literally says he has compassion on them. He heals them. Then he feeds them. Friends, if you're not willing to be interrupted, you're going to miss basically all of these opportunities. Two more quick ones. Practice. Learn from Jesus how to engage people's story. And what does Jesus do here? He's doing it all the time. He's engaging people. He's asking revealing questions. He's being kind. He's being compassionate, but he's not holding back. Like when it's time to say, hey, hang on, I am he. Hang on, what you're doing is worthless. Jesus never holds back. He picks up right where she is and he points her to who he is. We see Philip do this in Acts 8 with the Ethiopian eunuch. It's a great skill to learn, just how to step right into the story, right into the moment and go, let me help you see something. Everywhere you go, like, just kind of be on, like, and just try. You know, sometimes it can be so intimidating. You know, it's like, reminds me of like middle schoolers at a dance. You know, the boys are on one side and the girls on the other. And it's like, no one everyone wants to dance, but no one's willing to try this out. You know, and I tell the boy, hey, just say hi. That's a good first step. Hi, you know, that might be good for some of you single guys here today. It's a good step. Just say hi, you know. Doesn't mean you're getting married if she says hi back, by the way. Just hi. But I'm just always trying. I'm always practicing. I'm always kind of fishing, so to speak. I mean, mentioned last night at dinner. We went to an ice cream place last night. Sorry, kids. Forgot to tell you about that. And they were slammed, inundated. And there was two staff members, and they were literally running around like chickens with their heads cut off. And I just said to the woman, I said, are you okay? One of the staff members, and she said, honestly, I don't know. I said, hey, you're doing great. Like, she was like, oh, okay. You know, like, just go for it, right? And the last one is pray. Don't rely on techniques. Rely on prayer. Pray in the car before you can go in the grocery store. Pray wherever you go. Like, just trust God. I want to close lastly with a story. This is a strange one. Just to illustrate all of this for you. We were on sabbatical last summer, and we were coming back from Mexico. My wife and kids were already back in California. My kids don't know the story. They're about to hear it. And it's a crazy one. So I got bumped up to first class for free. And I get on the plane. I'm going to be super quick with this story, but it's insane. The first seat I get in, I'm sitting next to a young mom, and she's got this kid, and she's clearly needing some help. And her friend was with her, this lady, but she's now in a seat up here. And I'm like, hang on, why don't you, I'll switch with your friend. Your friend can sit next to you. You know, you got a baby. I'm a dad. I know what it's like. We travel. So we sit seats, but now I'm sitting next to a young little girl who is looking at me and terrified that she has to sit next to me on this flight. Like, I can see just the fear. She doesn't look at me and go, young Santa? She looks at me and think, this guy, like, he's, you know, something's wrong. So I said, sweetheart, are your parents on this flight? She said, my dad's back there. I was like, why don't I switch with your dad? Will that make everybody happy, you know? So I'm now moved twice. The flight attendant's yelling at me, sir, find your seat. Like, you know, other people are shouting back, he's being nice. Like, so I'm not making this up. Like, so now I've moved from, and this will be important, I've moved from the seat next to the mom to the front. Now the dad comes up and sits here. Now I moved to where he was, which is behind the lady who I originally switched with. So I'm catacorner now from the woman I would have been sitting next to. I promise this is going somewhere, and it's going to blow your mind. I asked Eric and Celeste if I could tell this story. So, just putting that out there if it was a bad idea. So they make mistakes like everyone else. In the middle of this flight, pretty soon, this woman takes out her very large phone, like a humongous phone, and begins to hold it up. Now, if you've ever sat in first class, there's like bigger gaps between the seats, you know. It's like she's basically holding it in my face. And it's a long, like 10, 20 minutes of this. And it's just video after video of herself naked. And she's just showing her friend, look at my skin looks here, looks better here. What do you think about this? And I'm like, wow, I should have sat next to the girl up there and just creeped her out the whole time. Like, I could have avoided this whole situation, you know? So I'm just doing this number, whatever. I can sense she's turned on a show. I think, I've got some relief. My neck's killing me. I find out the show is Sex and the City. Wow, we're back to this, okay? And we're doing this number again for a little bit. Oh, she's turned that off. And that one didn't last very long. And she puts on this movie, Jesus Revolution, which is about this revival that happened back in the 70s or whatever. And I'm thinking, in this moment, I'm thinking, this is very strange. And all of a sudden, I'm going, God, you're up to something. Something is going on here. And she starts watching this movie, and she begins to, I'm talking ugly cry. Like, shake and sob, like wiping. She is, like, just undone watching this movie. And I'm, like, eat up with, like, God, somehow, some way, I'm going to, like, this is happening. There's a door. It's right here. But how do I cross it? Because, like, I've seen her naked. And it's, you know what I'm saying? It's weird. You know, like, let's just get that out of the way. It's weird, right? And so I'm thinking, how do I do this? So we get off the plane, and I'm feeling the pressure. Like, we're going to get the baggage claim. It's going to be over. This is the door. The door is closing. It's closing. We get to the escalator. She looks like she's never done this with a child before. Like, escalator, what are we going to do? Just push him and fingers crossed. Like, so I'm a dad. So I'm like, hey, I'm a dad. Let me help. I jump in. I grab the front. I was like, let me just help you. We go down the thing. She's like, oh my gosh, you're so nice, blah, blah, blah. I was like, oh, you know, it's fine. I'm a dad. We travel. I was like, hey, what do you do for a living? You know, just start off. She goes, wow, I'm this influencer, and I wrote this book, and it's a bestseller, and I'm not going to tell you the name because you look her up, whatever, but she's a big deal. And she's like going on and on about how successful he is, how great she is, whatever. And she says, what do you do? And I was like, here we go. I was like, I'm a pastor. And her friend like bust out laughing. They're like, oh my gosh, you're giving up such pastor vibes. I was like, what is a pastor vibe? She's like, you're just really helpful and nice. I was like, that's not what a lot of people mean when they say that. I said, I'm a pastor. I said, you know, I couldn't help but notice the movie you were watching. I didn't say you were crying your eyes out. I just couldn't help it. What did you think? I was like, my wife watched it recently. I was thinking about checking it out. What did you think? And she just started crying again. She's like, man, I don't know what it was. She's like, you know, I went to Bible college. Yeah. She said, I went to a Bible college, and she's like, you know, you've probably heard of it or whatever, blah, blah, blah. She's like, yeah, sometimes I still think about those things. She's like, I don't know what it was in that movie. And I was like, the door is here. And I just said, ma'am, I think, I said, I think you encountered, like, I was like, I know you're successful, and you built a really big thing. I said, but I think you encountered that there's, like, a God who's bigger than all that, and a God who can do things that you can never do, that all your stuff can never fix. I was like, I think that's what happened to you. I think, like, with all your stuff, you actually got to see there's a real God, and you need him. And by that time, we'd reached the customs desk, and we had to go through the thing. She was so kind. She was really just like, man, thanks so much. Like, this has been a big deal. And so I don't know whatever happened to her. I did immediately call Jill and say, something happened. Let me tell the whole story first. Guys, people all around you, literally all around you, are just like that woman in John 4, are just like that woman on the plane, are just like that waitress, are just like that lady at the grocery store. They're everywhere. The fields are literally white. Yeah. You don't have to get on a plane and go on a mission trip. You can't. It's a great idea, but you don't have to do that for this. Yeah. They're literally everywhere. They're everywhere. Some of you may be in the room. And this is you. Today, the real Jesus, that same Jesus from John 4, is here. Let me pray for us.